Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at Brown Jason. Here on yet another Victory Monday, got the whole crew with me. JR, what's going on, my man?
You know, just enjoying eating another W.
All right, Flacco. And Yanka, stop that. Stop that right now. Stop it. Miles, my man.
Yo, what
how's
up?
How's it going? Oh, there you go. You're back. We can hear you. What's going on, dude?
Stop. You act like this. We didn't just start the pod. Put me on blast like that.
My fault, man.
I'm good.
How's Teddy?
Teddy's over playing with another puppy, so I don't know.
Ted, y'all have play dates for the puppies?
It's like, yeah, man. Got to get them tired somehow.
Wow. Okay. I learned something new about this whole like pet thing. You know, every podcast. And last,
it's a trip, man.
Gotta but certainly not least.
Granddad.
Sexy Prince. Yeah, everyone's favorite hater. What's going on, dude?
You know, I'm embracing the role. It's nice to be on this side of things for a change. But no, it's good. You know, I'm just like, y'all enjoying Victory Monday. Mondays are always my day off, so it's always nice to, you know, have a victory and then get to spend all day, you know, just – you know,
nitpicking
and just watch the games all over again.
Nitpicking for real.
and giving you guys accuracies of what I'm seeing.
Maybe we need to get your boss to have you work on Monday so you won't have as much time to nitpick all these things that happen in the game.
Also nitpick from my office.
Okay, well, I guess that won't help. I guess it won't help.
I hope your boss isn't listening to this.
You know, I can tell you that.
All right, well, let's jump into this thing, and, you know, we'll start off. Prince gave us a good segue there with nitpicking, and no, we're not going to talk about the thing that y'all think we're going to talk about to start things off. We're going to talk about a different set of nitpicking, because in this game, you know, it added to the lore of Xavier Rhodes. You know, the word on Vikings Twitter is that Xavier Rhodes once again put the clamps on Julio Jones, and obviously, you know, this set off a bit of a conversation. I know early in the game, there was a slant route that, you know, Julio, he dusted Xavier Rhodes on, but the throw was inaccurate. And, you know, obviously it was a drop incompletion. So, you know, that doesn't go on the stat sheet. But there were another few times throughout the game where, you know, it looked like Julio found himself some space. But because the Vikings are a great overall defensive unit, either the pass rush got to Matt Ryan, kind of hurried him, couldn't step into a throw, had to rush, maybe go someplace else in the progression. And so I wanted to, you know, ask you guys, and you know, JR, I will start with you on this one here. I guess from your perspective, how do you define a cornerback locking someone down? Is it only what happens on the stat sheet, or when you're evaluating a performance of a cornerback versus a wide receiver, are you also, you know, looking at what's happening play by play and how many times that receiver is actually beating that cornerback in a one-on-one matchup?
I think it's a little mixture of both. Just going back off yesterday's matchup, I thought Xavier Rhodes did a fantastic job on Julio Jones. And, I mean, yeah, he got open sometimes, but it's like I tweeted yesterday. It's gotten to the point now where a lot of people are disappointed or they're highlighting every time Xavier Rhodes gets beat. We're expecting him to pitch a shutout every single week. And, I mean, that comes with the elite territory and the standard that Xavier Rhodes has set for himself. But, I mean, he's guarding arguably the best player or receiver in the NFL in Julio Jones. Of course, I mean, he's not going to completely lock him down or be hip to hip with him every single play. And I know a lot of people were putting up clips where he beat him or Julio beat Xavier Rhodes, but Matt Ryan didn't throw it to him. I'm just like, who cares? That's like me saying, if I'm a batter, I hit the ball 398 yards and the wall is 399 yards and the outfielder catches it. Like, who cares? I mean, it doesn't really count because, I mean, I go by the stat book, and Xavier Rhodes held him to one catch for 13 yards. I don't give him credit for that second catch he had because Xavier Rhodes wasn't guarding him. it got to the point where they were putting Julio in the slot and Xavier wasn't shadowing him in the slot. And what Dan Quinn was trying to do, or Sark was trying to do, Steve Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator, was trying to do, they were trying to time it to where Xavier Rhodes couldn't find him pre-snap, and they were trying to break the huddle as late as possible so Xavier Rhodes couldn't find Julio Jones. So I think he completely shut down Julio Jones. Yes, it was a team effort, but I think Next Gen Stats had it where he was guarding Julio Jones 74% of the time. So I think he did a great job on him. And I think he I won't say completely shut him down, but I think he limited him.
They even
And I'm with you on that one. And just to kind of play devil's advocate on that one. So, I mean, when you're looking from just an evaluation standpoint for cornerbacks, wide receivers, you pretty much are just going to go whatever the stat sheet says. If the quarterback doesn't look that way, you kind of give credit to the cornerback's reputation, coverage, whatever it might be, for just taking the quarterback completely away from that side of the field.
Yeah, and like I said, it comes with the reputation. It got to the point where Matt Ryan wasn't even looking to Julio Jones or to where Xavier Rhodes was.
That makes sense. And we'll move it along to Miles here, because, I mean, you played the wide receiver position, so I want to get your kind of take on it. I guess when you are looking at a wide receiver cornerback matchup, let's say you're watching an All-22, and you see, you know, on the stat sheet, the wide receiver doesn't do too much, but then when you go watch All-22 – you see that, you know, you brought it up a couple of times with like Treadwell when you're kind of making a case for why we've been too hard on Treadwell, is that he's doing what he needs to do. He's getting open. He's winning his matchup. So how do you balance that out when, you know, a guy maybe is winning his matchup, but then he's not getting the ball, when you kind of are looking at that wide receiver cornerback matchup to determine, you know, who won or how that went or how you're scoring it for the game?
Yeah, I think it definitely comes down to like you know how early in the season Mike Evans, you know, he had the response on Twitter about, you know, people said that Xavier locked him down. He's like, check the film, watch the film don't lie. You know, pretty much in that's like I would probably compare that to a similar situation this week against Julio, where there probably were some instances where Julio got himself open. But the offensive scheme or the pass rush or something didn't allow for Matt Ryan to get to that read in his progression, whether it was, you know, the second, third, or fourth read in his progression, which is still a trip to me, because if I was the Atlanta Falcons watching, you know, kind of the last game, what the Detroit Lions did, they said Rhodes and who he is, we know how handsy he can get, we know he doesn't always to look for the ball. So they attacked him anyways, and they found some weaknesses. And I know Xavier's a little hobbled, you know, on the Thanksgiving game a little bit with that calf injury, and he looked a little gassed yesterday in Atlanta. I even think he went got an IV or Band-Aid or something wrapped around his elbow. So probably needed a little fluids in his system. But to go back to it, I think I'm really surprised Matt Ryan and like the scheme still wasn't. We know Xavier Rhodes is gonna be guarding Julio Jones, but we still need to get him the ball, because Julio's obviously their best offensive playmaker, and he's pretty much the make or break guy in terms of how they usually win games. Get him the ball, get him, you know, whether it's big plays downfield, because like what we've also seen from Xavier too is the pass interference calls. They'll call the holding calls on him because grabby and handsy. So I'm really surprised they didn't try to attack him early, just to kind of see what they could kind of do against him. But they kind of completely avoided him. Like JR said, that reputation that Xavier's kind of built is he's a lockdown corner, so we're not really gonna take too many chances, because we know he's he can ball hawk, he can create turnovers, he can do all that. So I'm just really surprised that there wasn't more opportunities. Matt Ryan didn't take more opportunities and more chances to feed Julio, because, like JR said, and some of you guys watching the film, there were opportunities there. So I would probably say it was a little bit more of an even matchup than a complete lockdown, in terms of if you're watching the film and seeing what Julio did, what he needed to do to get open, he just didn't get the ball.
So from your perspective as a wide receiver, it's more Xavier did his thing, but it also looks from your perspective like the scheme or Sark or Matt Ryan or whatever it was just didn't do what they needed to do and just feeding their best player, making sure he stayed involved, getting him the ball, trying to get those, you know, pass interferences or whatever it might be. You think, you know, as much as Xavier Rhodes did, you also kind of attribute some of Julio's poor performance to kind of scheme and execution from all the players on the field?
Yeah, definitely. Just because I think to not take opportunities to feed a guy like Julio Jones is crazy to me. I don't care who's guarding him. It could have been Patrick Peterson or anybody else who shadows number one wide receivers. You still have to give your best players an opportunity at some point. Like, that's where I have a hard time just, you know, take those chances. Like, I really think that they had a conservative game plan yesterday, the Atlanta Falcons, and you didn't see any deep shots downfield. I think we saw one deep shot downfield that Andrew Sadejo broke up on Julio Jones, but other than that, I don't know shots downfield. So I'm really surprised they didn't, just because, you know, like I alluded to before, some of those pass interference calls, you know, anything that could happen, just, you know, take one or two chances with the guy like Julio, because he's got that opportunity to jump, you know, out-jump a lot of defensive backs and just make plays, but they didn't really want to do it. They seemed to try to find other ways, and yeah, I don't know. I'm really surprised, and I feel like they're looking back and watching that film, and they're regretting it a little bit too.
All right, and last but certainly not least here, Saxy Prince. Are you going to make it a clean sweep? I guess Miles was kind of on the fence, so I guess you're the deciding vote here, Saxy Prince. Which way are you going with it? Was it a lockdown?
Oh, and I'm not taking anything away from Xavier, because Xavier played a great game, but yeah.
I feel like you're straddling the fence on this one a little bit, though, Miles.
A little bit. It was still one catch for 13 yards, so.
Okay. So, Saxy, where are you at with it? Lockdown based on the stat sheet? Or are you trying to add a little bit more context, a little nuance, maybe a little nitpicking from your film analysis?
Yeah, I guess, you know, from everything that I was seeing from the film, I have kind of maintained that I still feel like Xavier Rhodes isn't completely healthy. That being said, I don't feel like he was completely locked down yesterday, so I'm going to lean towards more not. I mean, obviously, we already know, like, you're going to get beat as a corner. It's going to happen. You know, but part of your job is obviously to minimize you know, what a receiver is allowed to do. You know, a lot of things that I saw on film was, you know, Xavier obviously rerouting Julio Jones, because obviously some of his job is the minute Matt Ryan looks towards Julio's way, if during that time, you know, Julio Jones isn't open because of something Xavier Rhodes did, but maybe it's like a busted play and, you know, then you see Julio Jones kind of streaking down on that, and then Matt Ryan finds him. You know, it becomes difficult for you to kind of grade it. You know, did Xavier not do his part, or did he do his part? So, you know, it's I can understand why some people are kind of back and forth between these two, because, you know, there were times where, you know, Matt Ryan either made a play or Julio, you know, extended the play for some reason or another, where, you know, obviously, you know, you can only cover a guy for so long. But I tended to lean more towards you know, Xavier didn't quite shut him down. Like, you know, we normally are used to seeing him do two wide receivers and stuff. I know the stat sheet might say he did, but I felt like the film didn't quite say that. But I think that's okay, because, I mean, you minimized a guy who in back-to-back games had, was it 150 yards plus?
Yeah, 253.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you, for a guy who can clearly go off at that rate, you know, I think for the context of what Mike Zimmer and Xavier Rhodes needed him to do, I still think he did an outstanding job. Did he lock him down? No, but did he kind of minimize what he could have done? Absolutely.
Man, we about to have to start calling Prince like the Vikings Grinch or something. Just...
We know why. Nothing will be right. Nothing will be right.
We'll find that dark cloud for you in any performance from the Vikings. But we appreciate you, Prince. You keep us grounded. You don't let us get too far off into the clouds, into the future. So, you know, we give you a tough time for it, but, you know, you keep us grounded, which is weird. I guess not really. You know, Miles is our optimistic one who, you know, we already won the Super Bowl. But, like, Prince has overtaken JR as like, the quote, realist.
Did I not just say that I don't? It don't matter.
You're optimist, Miles. What do you want? You're the optimist on the podcast. I mean, it is what it is. But, you know, since we're going here, we talk again, you know, Prince being the Grinch, nitpicking, hating, looking for stuff that, you know, the general populace doesn't really want to hear about, talk about. We're going to bring it right back. We're going to keep asking Saxy Prince the same question. And I already know the answer because we've been arguing about this all day long. But Saxy Prince, are you ready? Is it time to bend the knee and just embrace Case Keenum as your quarterback? Because he had another great game.
For 2017. We don't need to talk about the future, but for 2017.
2017. Is he your quarterback?
He had a great half of football. I can tell you.
Hold on. Which half are you saying was the bad half?
Not the second half.
So you're saying the first half was bad?
I'm saying the first half was...
You do understand it in the first half he had a 70% completion percentage and only missed 5 passes.
Yeah,
because he had a passer rating of 107.5, and we're gonna say that's bad.
So we're not. Here's the thing: is when I nitpick, people always think that I'm always nitpicking, when he's incompleting or and whatnot. Like he can throw, like a receiver obviously can catch the ball and it could still be a bad pass. And also vice versa, it could still be a good pass, but an incompletion. You know, as far as what I'm looking at, as far as Case Keenum, what I saw the last three-ish games, you know, Washington, the Rams, and then Detroit, I saw a Case Keenum that I was starting to feel a little bit more comfortable, being the signal caller, the guy who looked more like he was, not game managing so much, but he really was kind of taking control of the offense. And then again, you saw a return of that guy in the second half, you know, but the first half of the game yesterday. And again, I don't completely blame Case Keenum, but because there were things that Atlanta was doing to take away some of those, you know, deeper routes that you were seeing from Diggs and from Thielen, you know, but there was obviously a missed opportunity with Adam Thielen. And honestly, it is okay to say, you know, like, yeah, he had some bad throws. He had a bad stretch of football. Like, at most quarterbacks in the league, at some point, they have that. And it's also
I feel like when you say bad, I feel like that's where we get into a little bit. Because I feel like saying it was bad feels hyperbolic. On the first, like, we can say in the beginning, and I kind of feel like maybe it's a bit of, like, anchoring bias in that when we were all kind of, we were messaging at the beginning, he started off not looking great.
No.
And he was jittery.
And he missed it.
I almost feel like
feeling like it happens.
You've carried that feeling from that, like, first series when he did look jittery and he did lock on to Stephon Diggs and miss Adam Thielen coming across the middle. And it feels like that's colored your analysis of the whole rest of the game. But he only had 4 incompletions.
That's not true at all, because I was probably the only one that went onto Twitter and said, like, hey, this is not it for everyone who's saying to pull Case Keenum. There's no point in that. He's played more than well enough.
Were there people saying to pull Case Keenum because the
absolutely.
There nobody on this podcast. That.
Okay, including myself. I was just like, I felt confident that Case Keenum would go out and do what he did in the second half, which is what he's done. I thought this game was a lot more similar to kind of Washington, in which it's actually the opposite of Washington, where he kind of started off really, really hot. And then, you know, he kind of fizzled out towards, the second half of that game. This game, I felt like he was kind of, below average, you know, more closer to that floor. And then he started to turn it on more towards the second half. Obviously, of his 227 yards, he obviously has 74 yards that, you know, obviously through the air, like, you know, guys were making more plays on the ground than they were, you know, from any of, you know, Keenum's passes. I'm not trying to take away from the things that he's necessarily doing well, because I've said the things that he's done well. But I think it's also okay to say, like, if there are things that he's not doing well, it's okay to talk about them, even if there are times where, yes, he's being efficient.
Okay, what were those things?
Let's not forget.
Let's be specific. What were the things that he was doing poorly in this game, in your opinion?
Okay, so as far as routes that Case Keenum can throw, He's pretty decent at throwing a lot of inside routes. You know, the quick slants, the hitches. Like, he's really good at throwing that. When it comes to, when he has to throw like outside the numbers, more towards the boundaries, the out routes and stuff, a lot of times you're seeing the ball either die, not get to its place, not giving the receiver enough room to actually make the catch. You saw that on two specific catches, the Adam Thielen throw when he had to actually come back to the ball, and then one of Diggs where Diggs almost made a pretty outstanding catch, but again, it didn't lead him enough room to be able to actually make that catch. It's obviously things like that where you are seeing the limitations of Case Keenan, and it almost feels like the script that we have every game, it's kind of like Shermer's test run. You know, he sees like, well, what are the things am I going to be able to do with Keenum for this game? Because he is a limited cornerback. And then once he kind of figures that out, and then he can kind of obviously maneuver the game plan towards, okay, well, maybe I feel a little bit more confident in what Keenum's going to do as far as throwing the ball down the field. So obviously he had three passes that only went over 15 yards, and all of them were incompletions. And after that point, you obviously saw a lot more of the dink and dunk offense, which is nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, that when it comes to defensive coordinators who are going to be able to take things away and whatnot, you might see some limits. You might see some of those limitations become problematic. Obviously, once we get to playoff play, where every team or most of the teams that are there are playing, at a much, much higher level. So, I mean, from a guy who went from being pretty bad at football before this, and, he was a top 10 quarterback, I will always admit that, and he's playing well, especially over these last couple weeks. Like, I'm not there yet.
It's been over a month, but we'll say a couple weeks.
A month, okay. But I'm sorry. I'm not ready. I think that's the mistake that a lot of people are going to make. He's like, okay, he's strung together a short sample size of playing really, really good football, and then that's going to get us all to believe in, like, yeah, Case Keenum is that guy, and then old Case Keenum might show up. And I'm just saying, I'm still skeptical that guy might come back. However, I think Pat Shurmur has enough built into this offense where I feel we might not get a catastrophe. We might
So the question remains then.
No, I'm not ready to bet.
What is it, based on what we're doing now, like based on what Case Keenum has been doing, what is it that he would need to do? Because now, let's see, last four games, passer rating 117, 100.8, 121.8, and 120.4. And the 120.4 was in his not-so-good game in Atlanta. What is it that he needs to do for you to stop looking for reasons to not like Case Keenum?
It's not I don't hate Case Keenum. I feel like that's what our new blog needs to do.
Change the jersey number.
I didn't say hate. I'm saying we're not. It feels like you're looking for reasons to discredit what are very good by any standards when you're looking at them. They're very good. And if not very good, you would say at least comfortably above average performances, which in the NFL is saying quite a bit, because there are a lot of bad quarterbacks in the NFL.
There are.
So we have comfortably above average at worst quarterback play.
And there are a lot of average quarterbacks, and we're getting above average quarterback play.
Absolutely.
And we're complaining about above average quarterback play. I just don't understand it.
I'm not complaining. You guys want me to bend the knee to this guy, and I'm not ready there. I'm not ready to bend the knee to a quarterback who still, for the most part, is still kind of a one-read type quarterback who takes off and run. He is playing very, very well in what he's being asked to do, and that's fine. I just think that we're going to need a little bit more if we're really, truly going to win this Super Bowl. And I think that we can.
But there it is. You just made the point, though, is that one of the arguments that you've made consistently when it comes to evaluating Teddy Bridgewater, who we know you're a fan of, who we know you'd love to see play, is that you have to evaluate a quarterback in the context of what he's being asked to do. And okay, but what you just said is that Case Keenum is executing what he's being asked to do at an incredibly high level. So what's
here's
the
difference. Here's the difference between that, Jason. The difference is Teddy was being asked to run an offense that is a putrid offense whatsoever. He wasn't being asked to run an offense that actually could actually bring out the talents in which would make him more than just the slightly below average quarterback that he displays. Case Keenum is being asked to run an offense that honestly plays to the things that Case Keenum can do well, right? And you've seen that because now he's a tap time quarterback after previously never even getting anywhere close to that and anywhere that he's been at.
So why would we hold that against him, though? The fact that he's in a good situation and playing well, why is that something that we would hold against him? Like Drew Brees is you know, right now when I looked at things, he's the quarterback who, based on his surroundings, based on who he's throwing the ball to, based on his protection, based on the running game success rate, he's the quarterback that's getting the most help of any quarterback in the league based on his surroundings. We're not holding that against him because he's playing well in great surroundings. Why would we hold it against the quarterback for doing what he's supposed to do when he has great surroundings?
Because I'm also looking at Case Keenum as far as, again, if for whatever reason some of those ideal situations start to go away. Again, I'm also considering a defensive coordinator who might be good enough to, like, I'm imagining if Case Keenum had to play against a Mike Zimmer defense, right? And we might not see that in the playoffs, but we might see something that's relatively close. I'm not sure if I'm comfortable enough to say, you know, that game managing Case Keenum, who's playing at an efficient level, would be enough to propel us over a defense like that. We still haven't seen Case Keenum play in a game where he's playing behind by 14 points. Not saying that I want him to, but I'm saying that might be the case sometime in the playoffs. And do I see a Case Keenum who can get us over the hump? I'm not there yet, you guys. A lot of the touchdowns that he has, who I've given him credit for being very efficient in the red zone, a lot of the times you're not seeing him having to, you know, necessarily thread the needle or, you know, make a huge play. A lot of times he's throwing touchdowns to guys who are wide open. Now, I'm not taking that away from him per se, but I'm just saying I'm not there yet. And okay. I think it's okay for me to maintain a level of skepticism, which I continue to do.
Okay, well, we'll let you call it skepticism. We'll probably call it hating or nitpicking just a little bit.
Okay,
and, so, you know, I'm not saying they're the same person, but while you keep saying game manager, like Tom Brady didn't game manage himself to the first couple Super Bowls he won there on the back of a great defense with him not being asked to do very much. But, you know, it's possible that these things can happen. Again, not saying Case Keenum's Tom Brady, but if you're in a great situation, you absolutely can game manage yourself through the playoffs. And we're playing playoff teams now.
Can I say one more thing, too, about that?
Jason? Absolutely.
Prince, you touched on, like, the talent of defenses that we're facing, you know, and then we might face in the playoffs. In all 100% honesty, yesterday's game, that was the best defense we faced all season and might be the best defense we face all season. The only other defense that I could see, the only two other teams in the NFC, I'm just saying until we get to the Super Bowl, or not till we, but, like, if we get to the Super Bowl, but through the NFC, the Saints with a healthy Marshawn Lattimore and their healthy defensive backs is one team that worries me, but we played them week one, which, so they're a different team now. That's one. And then because they're front seven, because they've lost Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor, but their front seven's legit. Those are the only other two defensive schemed teams that really scare me in terms of taking away everything that we do with a Case Keenum, for example, and what he does, because the playoff atmosphere yesterday in Atlanta against a really good front seven and held his own and had, Jason, what was the passer rating, was 120?
120.4.
Five incompletions and two touchdowns. Like, I really don't know what else he could do against a really good football team at this point, because, like,
I mean, let's also not forget, you know, heart, I mean, through Atlanta was a great
through the hardest part of the schedule right now that we're going through. Case is playing his best football.
This is the hardest
part of the whole season right now, and Case is playing his best football.
I can
and
honestly
you're still tell me that you're skeptical though. That's where I struggle.
I can honestly say, well, that's but Miles, that's where precedent actually plays a role in this. Again, like, there, it is rare for a quarterback who had, again, in no statistical, like, avenues whatsoever, has ever ranked even in the top half of the league, and all of a sudden he is the top. It's okay to have some skepticism as far as that, but it's also okay, which is what I've maintained, that he is still playing well despite all that stuff. But also, let's not forget that Atlanta, being a very, very good defense, were out their top two corners yesterday. Right, like, I'm almost saying that my expectation for Case Keenum is to, like, he should be playing this well, right? And anything below that is a disappointment. Like,
but he's playing to that level, and you're still disappointed. That's the thing. That's the I think that's where Jason and I struggle the most. I think is he's playing at that level, and you're still not satisfied with it. And that's
I'm still skeptical. Like that's an okay position to have, like, you guys. That's what I'm keep saying. I'm not saying that he played poorly yesterday, right? I said that he had a great after not really playing his best football in the first half. He played closer to what he has been for the last couple of weeks. And that's okay. I think that'll be enough. I've maintained that. I think that this team can honestly run the table for the rest and go 14-2 with Case Keenum as a quarterback. My worries has always come when we get into the postseason. I don't know if this is going to be the guy that's going to, you know, bring us to the Super Bowl and win it for us.
So your issues with Case aren't how he's playing. Your skepticism about Case really actually isn't about how he's playing. It's about a future potential matchup with an as yet unknown opponent who might have a defense good enough to stop what we're doing in the present.
Because that's what happens in the playoffs.
Okay.
Well, no, when I look at the next couple of games, you have Carolina, you have Cincy, you have Green Bay, and you have the Bears. When I look at that matchup, yeah, I don't really see defensively. I don't really see a lot of the, the matchups that scare me. This matchup actually scared me before Trufant and Poole were out, but it got a lot more favorable to, it came a lot more favorable to Keenum when those two guys were out. Now, I don't think we're going to see, we're going to see that kind of defensive competition for the rest of the season. Come playoffs, though, I do think that that's going to be the case, which is why my skepticism exists.
All right. Well, I guess we've covered that. Prince is, we've talked about it before, or, you know, he is of Nigerian descent. He, like myself, is an immigrant, and he's made his mind up. So there's really nothing we're going to be able to do or say at this juncture that is going to be able to bring him on board. You know, maybe Case Keenum will have another handful of games with a passer rating over 100, and maybe Yanko will come on over to the winning team, but it's unlikely. He's made his mind up, and we're going to move this thing along. We're going to keep it moving. We've spent enough time trying to convince the Sexy Prince to join us.
Case needs to convince me, not you guys.
I mean, we've already asked you what else he needs to do, and you basically told us he needs to play like Aaron Rodgers at his peak for the rest of the season, and then you'll consider it. And then you'll consider it.
He doesn't need to play like Aaron Rodgers for the rest of the season. He doesn't.
Okay. All right, well, let's move it along here. We haven't heard from JR in just a little bit, and, you know, it's Victory Monday. Well, it's not just Victory Monday because he does this all the time, but it's been Victory Mondays or Fridays or Tuesdays or what, but it's been victories for a while now. But JR got back, you know, to get in there doing the Lord's work, doing a little film breakdown for us, letting us know what he was seeing when he went back and watched the game a second time, because we did have a game and we did win that game, you know. So we're arguing with Prince about, you know, Case Keenum and things that really don't matter, because at the end of the day, we won, which I'm very happy about. Grew up in Atlanta, got to talk quite a bit of smack to my friends who still live there. It's not as fun anymore, though. They've been broken. The Super Bowl took all their fight away. It didn't even register on the pain scale, is what my boy told me, that this game happened. But JR, what did you see when you went back and watched it? What are your thoughts in the game? And what are your thoughts, I guess, if you can shed a little light on your thoughts on kind of Case Keenum? And was his game as uneven as Yinka thought, you know, starting out? And or maybe was it further on the positive side from where Miles and I are coming from based on what we saw in the stat sheet?
Yeah, and you make a lot of really great points. I thought it was a great team win. Overall, a lot of individuals didn't really stand out as far as an individual performance. I thought it was a really great, well-executed game plan on both sides of the ball. Offensively, got off to a bit of a slow start, especially in the passing game. Diggs and Thielen were very limited in this game just because the Falcons, they played a lot of man coverage, but they weren't really blitzing Keenum a whole lot. They were really depending on their front four, getting a lot of pressure. And that's understandable just because they couldn't really blitz a lot because their secondary was so banged up. So they couldn't really rely on them as far as a whole bunch of man-to-man coverage, but they did play it in spots, and they were getting home a lot. Grady Jarrett was getting a good push up the pocket. Dontari Poe was getting some push as well, so their front was playing really well against the Vikings' offensive front. But I thought the Vikings' offense really wore them down as the game went on, and that's something we alluded to early on in the week in the pregame show last week. Their defense is a bit smaller, and they sacrifice that with a lot of speed and physicality. So they're not really big. They're more of a finesse defense, and they kind of wear down as games goes on. They're not able to get off blocks, and that's what you saw with Deion Jones and a lot of their other linebackers. They were starting to miss tackles in the run game as the game went along, and that's what you saw when Latavius Murray was starting to get some big runs, and that ended up opening up the passing game as well. Keenum did not play well in the first half. I think he ended up 13 for 17 in the first half. The numbers don't really tell the whole tale. He didn't really play well overall in the first half, but the second half he started calming down, and he just seemed really, really jittery in the first half. He was more of a one read and run guy. In the second half, he was more of a, you know, getting through to his first, second, and third read and his progressions. And Shermer did a really good job of simplifying the game plan in the second half, just because he seen Keenum was very jittery in the first half, and he kind of didn't really have it in the first half. But the second half, he definitely simplified the game plan, a lot of quick, easy throws out on the perimeter, a lot of screens. And that's when you saw Case Keenum get in rhythm, and he was a lot more efficient. Ended up going 13 for 13 in the second half. So Case really made some really nice throws. I think a big turnaround in the game was definitely the third down conversion to Thielen that really sealed the game. And there was another throw, I believe it was to Diggs. I can't really remember right now, but there was a couple throws that really turned the game around. As far as the defense, I thought they played lights out, man. I thought this was their best performance.
Hold on 1 second, JR. Before you get into the defense, that catch that Thielen had right there, for all the grief we've been giving Saxy Prince, that catch right there robbed Yinka of quite possibly the boldest, bold prediction that had ever been made on the show, which is that Diggs and Thielen were going to be held to under 40 yards. Game-sealing catch, Yinka was right. And then Thielen put the game away, and he was wrong, but he was close. He was close. I'll give him a kind of props on that. Yink.
I hate that combination of Yink. It just doesn't go.
Yeah, I don't like it either. But I'm sorry, JR. Get back to it, man. Get back to
it. That definitely was a bold prediction. It's pretty funny that almost came to fruition as well. But just moving on to the defensive side of the ball, I thought something that was really interesting. I didn't know if they were going to do it, but they did end up doing so. What Mike Zimmer said is, we're going to limit Julio Jones, but in turn, we're going to let Mohamed Sanu go off. So basically, he was saying, we're going to force Mohamed Sanu to have a career day in order to beat us. And that's what you saw. Mohamed Sanu, he flashed a lot. He had a lot of various catches on a lot of various different routes. And Mike Zimmer said, that's fine. Let him go off. Mike Zimmer felt as if Sanu didn't have the capable talent of being able to take over an entire game and beat the Vikings defense by himself, as opposed to a Julio Jones, who clearly has the talent to take over games and win games by himself. And that's what we saw the game plan was yesterday. So I thought that was very interesting. It's something I wanted to say they would do, but I wasn't really confident in saying that they would do that. And I thought that was interesting that they did end up doing that. But I thought it was a phenomenal team effort overall by the Vikings defense.
Yeah, man, and moving along, Miles, what were your thoughts, you know, at a glance? You know, we've kind of gone off track here, talking about some of the smaller nuances in the game, but I guess what were your thoughts on the overall performance, and what was your feeling coming out of this? I know you had some pretty positive things to say about how you thought the team played in this game.
I think positively would go to the defensive side. Obviously, they played lights out. I think offensively they did everything they needed to do to win this game. This was one of those – it really felt like – like when I was watching the game, it felt like a playoff-style game. Like everything from exciting all the way from the start to the game went super quick because, you know, both teams ran the ball quite a bit. There weren't – like you touched on with Case Keenum only having 5 incompletions, there wasn't a lot of incompletions. So there was a lot of – you know, the clock continued to run. So it went quick. It was a quick game. I think it ended here at like 2:40. is really a two and a half hour game, basically. So that's quick. What I definitely saw, though, what I think Atlanta did a really good job of real quick, and I kind of touched on this yesterday when we were talking about it, just because, you know, they had Desmond Trufant out and Brian Poole. They were without, you know, two of their top three cornerbacks yesterday, and obviously, you know, Trufant's their best cornerback. So I don't think they were able to do exactly what they wanted to do defensively, but I think what they did a great job of, and Dan Quinn did a great job of, was eliminating the big plays. Because they know that, you know, we thrive off the big plays. I think we're one of the top teams in the league with, in terms of explosive plays. I think it's 15 or 20 yards downfield are big plays, 20 yard plays. I can't remember the exact stat, but it's within that range of like 12 to 20 yard range of explosive plays. We're one of the top teams, and they did a really good job. I think we might have had maybe one or two plays on the ground that was over 15 yards overall. So I think they did a really good job of eliminating that. They made sure that, you know, Diggs and Thielen didn't get deep. They made sure that they took away our top two offensive weapons, and they made us become a dink and dunk offense, you know, kind of circa last season, but a little more efficient. Our run game obviously is a lot better than it was last season. And so I think they tried to make us a one dimensional team and not let us get explosive and make explosive plays. And they did a really good job of it, because it, you know, it warranted only 14 points from us. But what I really was impressed about on the offensive side of the ball, though, was we finally got to see Latavius Murray break tackles. And I think Luke made a stat. It was like, I think he had four total missed tackles, or forced four total missed tackles of the game yesterday, which was his season, like by far his season high. And that's always important. As a team like Atlanta, because they're so fast, they flow to the ball so well, and a guy like Murray was able to break tackles and you know, make some big runs, which really helped this offense a lot, and sustained drives. We had a lot of long drives, whether they turned into points or not. The field, I was really impressed with that. But jumping back to the defensive side of that ball, I tweeted some out last night that I think I want to dive into a little bit more, but I really think Harrison Smith is not getting enough credit for potentially being like a defensive player of the year. Just the impact he has all over the field, it's just phenomenal. I mean, whether it was him being a part of the double team on Julio Jones and making sure that Julio Jones wasn't making a lot of the big splash catches he usually does, or was in the run support, guarding tight ends or running backs. He's all over the place. And I know we talk about like captains on the field and best players on the field and all that, but I don't think there was a better player on the field yesterday than Harrison Smith. He was everywhere. He did everything, whether it was setting the edge, helping the run support, you know, in the passing game. I really do think he's the type of player that really should be considered for defensive player of the year. I think that's how well he's playing so far this year.
Yeah, definitely don't disagree with you there. I think the problem is, and it's one of the things that I think Andy Carlson tweeted it out, and then I retweeted it, is that we're not really there's no flash with this Vikings team. We've had a couple games where, you know, there's, you know, some big plays. I guess the Rams game where we, you know, kind of, you know, had that, you know, offensive eruption. But I mean, we're winning games in a dominant but fairly unremarkable fashion, right? And so Harrison Smith is dominating, but he's not dominating in the way that people want to see on TV. You know, he's not getting a lot of highlights. He hasn't had many of those, you know, big interceptions with the long run backs. The team isn't scoring a ton of, you know, defensive touchdowns like they have in years past. And so I think, you know, I agree that he's playing at that level. I just think it's tough because we're not seeing those splash plays from him like we've seen in the past. And, you know, Everson, you know, he's not as hot now rushing the pass as he was early in the season. So like some of the press that he was getting early has kind of gone away. So I don't know. I agree he probably should be, but I think the fact that we are just winning convincingly but boringly might keep some of the guys on the team who deserve accolades from getting them, just because of how these things go and the way the media kind of construes things. So
we're the Spurs, is what you're saying.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, we're winning like the Spurs, which is all right with me. And I'll take it. I'll take it. You know, if Zim can be popping, just have us, you know, win forever. That would be outstanding.
Wait, who's the boring fundamental Tim Duncan then?
Harrison Smith.
Is that Harrison?
Adam Thielen?
Adam Thielen's a good one too.
Adam Thielen. I mean, you know, you said he's a great football player. What was the quote, Miles?
Huh? I don't know. What was the quote?
You said Adam Thielen's great, but he lacks what?
Swag.
Swag.
Swag, yeah.
That's Tim Duncan to his team.
That's Tim Duncan right there. that's it. We're the Spurs. There we go. The Vikings are the Spurs. Perfect, JR.
Hey, I'll take that. Let's become a dynasty. Let's go.
Let's do it. Last but not least, Prince, what were your thoughts overall about the game? You don't have to get into the quarterback thing again. Just, you know, everything but the quarterback. What were your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, I think you guys kind of touched on it, that as far as defensively, it's just one of those things where no one really – well, to me, I feel like there's a few guys who flash. I feel like definitely Everson Griffin does flash. Even if he's not getting the sack numbers, I think the amount of pressure that he's able to provide, as well as the things that I'm continually to see. My eyes are always locked onto what Linval Joseph is doing. And I find three or four plays every single game where – a quarterback had to be flushed out because he's, getting into the backfield, or he's, you know, literally pushing a double team into the lap of a quarterback. And I think Trey Waynes is definitely playing some good football. So I think just collectively as a unit, you are starting to see them playing the well. But I think also the other reason why you maybe not seeing as much is, like, the defense doesn't have to do as much in games as of late. I think the offense has definitely even gotten better since it was, you know, towards the beginning of the season. And you're not really having to rely on the defense because you're getting more from the other side of the ball. I think it's great that you are starting to see the ball get shared a little bit more, too. It was great to see, you know, Treadwell even double clutch, as well as, you know, Michael Floyd getting involved, you know, third down reliable guy, Jerry's right. So it's just, again, I think it's just nice to see kind of the balance of both. And another thing that's a little bit underrated as well is Marcus Sherrills and his contribution. I think he's being very, very smart as far as when he chooses to take the ball out versus, you know, just kind of giving us that free 25 yards. There was one play where I think he was a little bit further into the end zone, maybe 5 yards deep or something. And he chose to take it out, and he got to the 30-yard line. I think that's something that you weren't seeing from Jarek, because Jarek would just take it out, and, you know, he wouldn't really get as many yards, for instance. So I think that switch as far as special teams has definitely improved a field position, which I think is playing a little bit more of a role as far as how the offense is playing. And then, you know, even if the offense doesn't end up scoring at all, able to at least flip the field and make it a little bit easier for the defense to operate. So I think just overall what it might take away from this game, which is it's a lot of good collective, three-phase football.
I like it. We went through, we got all positivity from everyone, because why not? It was a great team game, great team win. And that's it. I really got nothing else here. Is JR, Miles, Prince, was there anything else you wanted to touch on this game before we get up out of here?
Nah, I'm good. Moving on.
By the way, I love watching Tack McKinley play.
He's going to be good.
He's just so energetic. He is so much fun to watch on film. Even if he makes a mistake, you can just tell. Like, he likes to be playing football, and he wants to be out there. So, and then also, I think McKenzie Alexander, he's just getting so much swag, and I think it's going to help later down the road. He's starting to recognize things a lot faster, and he's just able to, you know, start making plays on the ball. And I think you might see an interception or two come in the next couple of weeks if he's able to, he's able to get a little bit more, you know, a little bit more time.
And guess where he was at yesterday? Outside corner.
Yeah, outside corner.
Right, exactly. Right? Exactly.
And I mean, that might, you know, that you don't want either, whether it be Trey Waynes or Xavier Rhodes, to get injured, but you know, if we need to get have a guy who, you know, if one of those two are injured for a game or two, I'm more than feel confident having Mackenzie Alexander play outside. Definitely, the JR, know that you've been lobbying, but me, I have also been lobbying to see.
Were you about to say me, myself, and I?
No, I was just trying to use the right word.
No, I agree with that point, though. I think what's really nice right now with the way another guy who's quietly having a good season is Terrence Newman. He's not really splashing, making a lot of splash plays, but I think they've really gotten comfortable with him being in the nickel position, which allows a guy like Mackenzie Alexander kind of rotate between nickel and outside, especially if a guy like, you know, Trey Waynes or Xavier Rhodes comes out for a play or two. Mackenzie can go to his natural position on the outside, and they feel comfortable with Terrence in the middle. So I think that's been a really good opportunity for Mackenzie to kind of get his hand in both spots. And he's done well.
Yeah, and Vic Beasley shouldn't be an off-the-ball linebacker.
I don't understand what they're trying to
do
with
him. That was gross.
It doesn't make sense to me. That's like that's like what we were doing with Anthony Barr. But I'm not going to go there.
Let's the passer.
All right, let's move the NFL sack leader from last year to linebacker.
Yeah, that was awful.
Got what, 3.5 sacks right now?
Something like that.
I don't get it, because they got Tack McKinley, so like, oh, we don't. Let's change your position. It's like, no, man, just let him go after the passer, the quarterback. But whatever.
All right.
I want to make one last point, and then I'm
okay,
done.
Okay, go ahead.
Like we were talking about in our group chat and everything. I think personally, this was the best overall win of the season, just based off of the team we played, the quarterback that they have on the road, full on playoff atmosphere. It, like I said before, it felt like a straight playoff game. Everything about it, start to finish, just felt like like a playoff game. And just like being able to win on the road in a new stadium in Atlanta, against a guy like Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman, that combination. And then that, I know they're missing really some big key pieces on defense, but that's still a really good defense overall. And that the former, you know, they lost, but like, you know, the NFC champs, being able to go into Atlanta and win that game in that kind of way, I thought was really impressive. And I know that the Rams game was really impressive, but for me, when we're at home, I feel like we should be able to beat anybody. I don't really look at, and I'm, not to say it wasn't a great game or a great win, but just to be able to do it on the road, because I know that's been a lot of the big question marks we've had of this Vikings team the last few seasons is, can they win on the road in big games when they need to? And we're finally starting to see that. So that's why I was really impressed with yesterday's win.
Well, all right, then. We got that point in. I think we're going to go ahead and wrap this thing on up. So
thanks,
I know everyone's like, I got nothing else to say. And then we end up having another, you know, 5 minutes of discussion about stuff. And they were great points, Miles. They were very good. I definitely won't be playing music over these when the, you know, when I'm done producing the pod. Everyone will get to hear everything that you had to say. Because they were important points. Very important points. With no hating, which we like. Optimism. But anywho, my name is Jason Brown. I'd like to thank you for listening to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. Here once again, got the full crew, JR, Miles, and that hating man, Saxy Prince, is playing. Prince is a wonderful dude. He's jumped in, fully embraced the role of Climbing the Pocket heel, and that's a lot of work. So thank you, Prince, for all the nitpicking that you do.
You're welcome.
Y'all have a good night.